Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Hello, I'm Janet Moreno, the Executive Director of Priests for Life. Welcome to Just Ask Janet. Well, maybe you're puzzling yourself about, oh, what should I get my children or grandchildren for Christmas? You know, I really want to focus them in on the real meaning of Christmas. You know, it's okay to talk about Santa Claus and snowmen and gingerbread men and all these great things. But the real meaning of Christmas, of course, is the birth of Jesus, right? And the whole concept of Christmas, you know that word joy? It's all about, joy stands for the real meaning of Christmas, which is supposed to be Jesus first, others next, and you're last. Well, joining me today is a beautiful, famous author of adult books and children's books. He's also an executive here at Priests for Life. And oh my goodness, we've known each other like 30 years, but he has written some beautiful Christmas books. He has two new brand ones out this Christmas season. And I'm going to tell you all about these books, and they will make great kids gifts for your children and grandchildren. So welcome to our program, Anthony DeStefano.
Thank you, Janet. Thank you. You always give me the best build up in the world. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, listen, Anthony, as we know, you know, you have written now, I mean, how many children's books is it now? A dozen or more?
Something like 15, and not all of them are published, but next year I think 15 will have been published, 15 or 16.
Will have been published, right. And of course, your very first children's Christmas book is still my favorite, Little Star. And I believe you started writing when you were in high school, right? That was when the first time you wrote a children's book, correct?
Yes, I went to Stuyvesant High School in New York, which was actually a science high school, but my creative writing teacher was a man named Frank McCourt, who later went on to win the Pulitzer Prize and for a book called Angela's Ashes and got very famous. They even made a movie about it. But he was my teacher, and he decided to assign everyone the task of writing children's books because he wanted to break us high schoolers out of the habit of writing overly ornate, overly descriptive kinds of books, kinds of words. And he thought the best way to do that was to force us to write simple children's stories. And the book that I wrote was Little Star. And it stayed in a drawer for 30 years until it was finally published. Wow. So I think, and it's one of my favorites too. So in a way, it's sad. I peaked when I was 15 in a way.
Well, no, because you really, really keep coming up with great inspirational stories. And of course, you have now four children's books for Christmas, which is amazing. We have Little Star was your first. Of course, then you did The Grumpy Old Ox. But today we're going to talk about, for this Christmas season, you have not one, but two Christmas books. I mean, I don't know how people could just come up with not one, but two ideas. And the first one, I'm going to hold it up here. It's called The Beggar and the Bluebird. Tell us, what gave you the idea for this book?
You know, Janet, I grew up reading fairy tales, Hans Christian Andersen, the Grimm Brothers, and all those old Disney classic movies, Pinocchio, things like that. And I've always thought fairy tales are very powerful. They teach children not to be scared of dragons, but they teach children that you can slay a dragon. You can overcome the dragons of your life by being virtuous and by connecting to the power source of the universe, which we know is God. So I've always wanted to write a kind of a modern fairy tale and a Christian fairy tale. And that's what The Beggar and the Bluebird is. It's a story of a little bird who lives in the city, but whose flight southward for the winter keeps getting delayed because of the strange requests of a local street beggar. This beggar asks the bluebird to go on various errands of mercy for him, to deliver bread to a homeless man, to deliver money to a widow with children, and finally to deliver a gold cross to a little boy in the hospital. And as a result of performing these acts of kindness, the bird gets lost. Gets caught in a winter blizzard, and all seems like it's going to be lost. He might die. except for a very, a surprising ending, which I think we can give away here. And the surprising ending is that the street beggar is not really a beggar at all, but is really an angel of God.
So what happens now? Okay. Well, first of all, I have to ask a question. Why did you pick a bluebird? Because here's Janet's curious question, right? At Christmas time, if you look at decorations, they always show a cardinal. And you know the significance of a cardinal, right? If you see a cardinal around, it's if you've had a deceased loved one in your family, the cardinal is representing the deceased loved one, right? So to me, my mind would say, how come it wasn't the cardinal and the beggar? But of course, this rhymes better. Was there a reason why you picked the bluebird, or was it that it rhymed nicely with the beggar?
Well, first of all, I didn't want to use a cardinal because of what you just said, because there are already kinds of connotations, associations people make with cardinals. And I didn't want this story to be about this. In this particular book, the bluebird is kind of a Christ symbol. He risks sacrifice. He risks danger. He sacrifices himself in order to give others the gift of hope. And so because he's a Christ figure, I didn't want to confuse it with other things that might, you know, come in with being a cardinal. But for what you just said really is the main reason. Bluebird and beggar go together very well. It's an alliteration, the beggar and the bluebird. And it's important to have a title that is catchy and that people remember. Also, blue itself, as you know, is the color of Our Lady and the color of peacefulness. And blue is associated with heaven. And heaven plays a pretty big role, in, at least in the ending of this book.
I'm just going to look this picture here. Look at that poor little bluebird. He's freezing cold. He's got that gold cross you mentioned, right? And so tell us a little bit about the illustrations here, because they're absolutely beautiful. They're colorful. They're expressive. I mean, the expressions page after page that the bluebird has are just amazing. Tell us a little, like, look at this one here. Tell us a little bit about the illustrator.
Sure. Well, you just nailed it right on the head, Janet. It all comes down to putting human expressions on these animals. You know, these books, you know, they make use of animals. They're ostensibly about animals, but you know, they're really not about animals. They're really about people. These birds can talk. These birds can think. They have souls. And we put animals in books for various reasons. But one of the reasons is that they're just more accessible for children. Children are not intimidated by animals. They're not like adult men and women who are intimidating sometimes and who are authority figures, as well they should be. Children fall in love with animals right away. And so it's easier for them to get into the story right away and for the story to make a powerful impact on them. So when I'm going to do a story about an animal like a bluebird or a sheep or an ox or something, I try to find the illustrator who's the best at doing that. And to me, the best person in the world at that is a guy named Richard Cowdery. He's a New York Times bestselling illustrator. He sold a gazillion books, the Marley and Me series, Fiona the Hippo. He's done a lot of mainstream work. And he could work for Disney if he wanted, you know? And I think that there's no reason in the world why Christian books or Catholic books shouldn't use the best illustrators that those big giant secular companies are using. Why shouldn't we use the best illustrators since we're telling the greatest story in the world? So Richard is the guy who can really give an animal an expression so adorable that a child will fall in love with that animal right away and then immediately enter into the story.
Well, I mean, look at this one here with his wings kind of, it's as if his wings here to me look like hands, like he's making an expression like that, right? I mean, it's quite clever, I think. It really is.
Now, yeah, brilliant. He's very brilliant.
Now, you alluded to the fact that the beggar becomes someone else, is really someone else. Is this the surprise here? Tell us about that.
Janet, there's a famous line that I'm sure many of your viewers are familiar from the letter to the Hebrews. And it goes something like, don't forget to show hospitality to strangers because, you know, you might not realize it, but they might be angels without you even knowing it. You know, I'm paraphrasing naturally. And that line from scripture has always captivated my imagination. The idea that you could be talking to a beggar on the street or to someone else who, and meanwhile, they're not really poor or shabby, but they are a powerful angel of God. And And I always thought I would like to put that concept in a children's book because it's very powerful. It's very powerful and memorable. And so, yes, the point of this story at the end is to show that this beggar who, you know, let this little bird go on all these dangerous missions was really an angel. And I want to, of course, teach children about angels because angels are real. And it's good for children to believe in angels and to know that angels are always with them. We all have guardian angels. And that children are never really alone. Not only do they have God and the saints in heaven and Our Lady, but they have their own personal guardian angel.
Wow. So now the poor little bird, he's freezing up north. He can't get south. So how does the beggar slash angel save him? What does he do for the poor little bird?
Well, you know, the ending is a little bit ambiguous, Janet, because, you know, there is a possibility that this little bluebird dies. You know, you can't really tell. He's laying flat and on that, on the ground. He looks pretty dead. But I don't say that because I don't want children to be frightened by that at all. So it's kind of ambiguous. It says that he's sleeping. And the angel looks at him and says to him, you know, you've done all these, you've taken all these risks, and you're never going to die. You're going to always sing your song to God. And so he picks him up and lifts him up and brings him into the sunlight. And of course, the sunlight is a symbol of God, of Jesus. And he wakes up and he goes singing into the summer sunshine. So again, the bird is kind of like a Christ figure. He sacrifices himself.
And there's the last picture. There he is, flying into the
It's sun. A happy ending. It's a happy ending.
That's right. That's right. I mean, to me, this is a beautiful story, really. And maybe it's a good story, Anthony, for the Christmas season, because very often we don't spend enough time dealing with Advent, the coming of Christ. We're very busy. We're making ourselves very busy getting ready for Christmas. And it was kind of like the little bluebird. He was getting busy to try to go south, and this angel was interrupting him. So maybe this is a lesson for us too, an Advent lesson of slowing down, right? Slowing down.
I hope so. I hope that's what people get out of it. It also introduces children, I think, in a very general way to the corporal and spiritual works of mercy. But, you know, as Father Frank always says, as you well remember, he says that, you know, the devil never tempts good people to do bad things. He doesn't tempt a good person to go out and kill someone. He tempts good people to do good things, but yeah, so many good things that mm-hmm. they forget to do the essential things, the important things. And at Christmas time, we see that's especially true because people get so caught up in good things like holiday gift giving and buying food and having celebrations that they forget about the main thing, which is that this is the celebration of the birth of our Lord.
Right. And so now, Mr. Wonderful Writer, you write not one this year, but a second Christmas book for children called Joseph's Donkey. So my first question is, which book did you write first? The Beggar and the Bluebird or Joseph's Donkey? Which came first?
You know, much like Little Star, which I wrote years and years ago, but I saved until I found a publisher. It took me three decades. I wrote The Beggar and the Bluebird several years ago too. It came to me, I don't know when, you know, at least 5 years ago, and it was hard for me to publish it. People didn't appreciate they thought it was a little too ambiguous, I think, the publishers, and they were afraid that children might think that the little bird died at the end, and so it was hard to find a publisher. So that stayed in the drawer for a couple of years. You know, you've got to be very persistent if you want to be a writer, if you want to be a published author. It's very hard to break through, even if you're well established and you've got a lot of successful books, as I have been blessed to have. So I wrote that book first, and the Joseph's Donkey I just wrote last year. I knew that the year of Joseph was coming up, and of course, you know that I had written two books on Mary, Our Lady's Wardrobe and Our Lady's Picture Book. And I wanted the book on Joseph to be sort of be a companion book to the books on Our Lady. I figured, you know, maybe, and who knows, maybe Our Lady was giving me a little nudge and saying, hey, why don't you, you wrote these two books on me. What about one on my good husband?
Well, and when you think about the donkey, Joseph's donkey, I mean, first of all, we all realize that Joseph had a donkey to take Mary, you know, into Bethlehem. And then, of course, he had the donkey to take the Holy Family to Egypt. But what I like what you point out here is he probably had the donkey before he met Mary because he was a carpenter. And how did he carry the wood around and all his things, right? So this donkey was around with Joseph for a while, wasn't he?
Well, it makes sense. You know, it makes sense. Joseph was a carpenter. He needed to haul around stones and wood. It makes sense that he had a donkey, and it makes sense. And donkeys do live for about 30 years or so. So it does make sense that the donkey he had was with the Holy Family for quite a long time. And I thought, wouldn't it be a good idea if it was this same donkey who not only helped Joseph in his business, but also played a key role in the infancy narrative, the events in the infancy narratives, you know, taking Jesus, taking Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, fleeing to Egypt, as you said, and then later on when Jesus was 12, you know, taking the Holy Family to Jerusalem where Jesus was lost and found again. Just a great way to introduce children to some of these famous biblical events, and also to introduce them to the nativity, the story of the first Christmas, the real story of Christmas.
And again, once again here, the illustrations, I mean, this was not Richard Cowdery. You picked a different illustrator for this book. So how come you didn't use, it's an animal, so how come you didn't stick with Richard Cowdery? You went with another illustrator for this book.
Well, Janet, that's a very good question, because when I do books on animals, as you know, and one time I did a book on a donkey called The Donkey That No One Could Ride, and it's maybe my biggest seller for children's books, I usually do go to Richard Cowdery. But the key point here is that this book isn't really truly about the donkey. This book is really about St. Joseph. In this book, the donkey is a mirror image of St. Joseph. Just like St. Joseph, he's quiet. Just like St. Joseph, he's a hard worker. Just like St. Joseph, he's humble. Just like St. Joseph, he protects the Holy Family. The whole point of this book is showing children, introducing children to this great saint through this donkey that they'll fall in love with. And it's hard to write a book just on St. Joseph because, as you may know, there's not one single word that of St. Joseph ever speaking in scripture. We know that he did speak, but there's no recorded words of him. So as a writer, I don't want to put words into his mouth. I don't like to do that. I like to stick really to the Bible. So really the main focus here is Joseph. And just like in my books on Mary, I wanted Mary to be someone who was real, not some sort of fictional character, not some sort of animated cartoon character. I wanted to impress the theological point that Mary is real. I wanted to do the same thing for Joseph. St. Joseph is real. He's not some fictional imaginary character that kids see in games and the cartoons they watch. So I wanted to use an artist who specialized in photorealism, where the images she produced, you feel like you could reach out and touch them. And I think that's what she did for Our Lady's Wardrobe. And I think that's what she's done for this book as well. And since I intended them to be companion books, I thought she was the best artist to go with.
Wow. I mean, they really, really are beautiful. I mean, I also like this book too. It's a little bit different size than the other, but you're right. I mean, the pictures, let me see. Look at this here. Look at the donkey and look at the Holy Family there. Beautiful. I mean, the illustrations are just gorgeous. So basically you're saying then, Anthony, this book takes us through these key stories in Joseph's life, right?
Basically. Yes. So children are introduced to the events of the infancy narratives in the Gospels of Luke and Matthew. So they see the first Christmas, they see, and that will help them later on when they read the Bible, later on when they learn about Jesus's life. They will already have been familiar with some of those events, hopefully, because they saw it when they were very young in a children's book. Yeah. But also this book is about introducing children to the character of St. Joseph, as I just said, through the donkey, who's a mirror image. But finally, the book, Janet, is really about finding Jesus. The climactic emotional scene of this book is finding Jesus in the temple. I think I devoted, this 10 pages devoted to that. And that's because that's really the heart of this book. This book is about finding Jesus. And I think for children, but really for adults, even more than children, I think a lot of us tend to lose Jesus sometimes in our life. And, you know, not because we're bad, but just because we get caught up in stress and money problems and family problems. And we wind up thinking that we're lost, but it's not really that we're lost. It's that we've lost the Lord. And so Christmas time is a great time to find Jesus again. And just like Joseph and Mary and the donkey found Jesus in the temple, those people out there, Christians or fallen away Catholics who feel like they're missing something in their life and maybe who have lost Jesus, they should go to church. It's a great time to go home to church and find Jesus there.
Right. Well, look at these illustrations here. This is one of my favorite, because too often I think we think of Jesus as a baby and then as a grown up. But I like the pictures here, the child Jesus. You know, we kind of skip over that so much. And here he is riding the donkey, and there is he with Joseph working in the carpenter shop. And I think for children, they were going to relate that, hey, Jesus was a kid just like me, you know, at a certain point, which I think too often we kind of skip over too much, wouldn't you say?
You know, it's something, Janet. Well, we have to be careful with it. You know, there's the reason why it's called the hidden life. God didn't choose to reveal all the details of Jesus's childhood and his teen years and when he was in his 20s. And there's a reason for that. I'm sure there are theological reasons that we don't have time to go into. But mainly, you know, we want to be careful if we're writers not to invent too many different things that aren't biblical. So I'm very careful when I show Jesus riding a donkey. I mean, I'm relatively sure that happened because they had a donkey. Jesus was a little boy like us. He must have rode on that donkey. So I'm not saying anything that's unbiblical or that's not reasonable. And that's my main thing that guides me. You know, I don't want to start inventing all kinds of miracles that didn't take place, et cetera.
Right, right. So anyway, I mean, these are both, to me, beautiful Christmas books, really. The Beggar and the Bluebird and Joseph's Donkey. And of course, brothers and sisters, you can go to our online store at Priest for Life at prolifeproducts.org, where you can purchase these two books. And like we already talked a little bit about Little Star. And of course, the fourth book is The Grumpy Old Ox. And we have a special deal, Anthony, going on our online store at prolifeproducts.org, where you can get all four of these Christmas books. And, you know, I'm a Nana, and I know I love reading your books to my grandchildren. And they're now a little bit older, some of them. They can read them themselves. And I can't wait to get these two new ones out to my grandchildren, because I'm sure they're going to be so excited. So now,
thank you, Janet. You know, all these books are very different. One, Little Star, focuses on love, the meaning of love. You know, the Grumpy Old Ox focuses on pride, spiritual pride. The Beggar and the Bluebird focuses on giving, the true meaning of gift giving, sacrifice. And of course, Joseph's Donkey focuses on, you know, finding Jesus and Saint Joseph. So you're hitting the Christmas theme from all the different angles there. So I'm proud that I've been able to do that. And it gives me great joy because Christmas is a magical time, or it should be anyway.
Wow. It absolutely is. And I think we need more and more things, really, excuse me, to keep us focused on Jesus a little bit more. Because when you think about it, Anthony, like, I know it seemed like Halloween came and went, and November 1st, it was All Saints Day, then All Souls Day. But in the whole secular world, the stores were already decorated for Christmas. Stores were already sending out emails about Black Friday sales, even though it was early November. I mean, it just seems everything has been so commercialized that I think to have books like this that can kind of reset ourselves a little spiritually, take the time, brothers and sisters, sit with your children, read these stories, you know, take a break, turn off the cell phones, shut off the TV. I think that's what we don't do enough of, Anthony. When you say, I mean, you know, I can remember as a child, you know, having books and more family time and talking, but too often now I think children are walking around like this, always looking at a cell phone or always on an iPad. And I think if they got all four of these beautiful Christmas books you've done, I think it's a fabulous way to press the pause button and refocus on the true meaning of Christmas. So I'm excited. I can't wait to get these books to my grandchildren. So it's amazing. I don't know how you keep doing it. Right?
You are very kind. Thank you very much. And I couldn't agree with you more about how noisy the world is and how detrimental it is for children's minds and personalities to become so fixated and turned inward on themselves with all these iPads and tablets and you know, it's a lot of negative effects. We haven't even seen all the negative effects that we will be seeing in coming years.
Well, I'll tell you, Anthony, I hope everyone goes to our online store at prolifeproducts.org. You can order all four of Anthony's children's books for Christmas individually, or we have a special package deal. You can get all four of these books for a $50 donation to our ministry at Priests for Life. So not only will you be blessed by these beautiful stories, but you'll also be helping us save babies here at Priests for Life. So, Anthony, I want to thank you for joining me today. It was a privilege always to sit and chat with you about your books, Mr. Famous Author, that I've known you for 30 years. Amazing.
Shannon.
So may you continue to be blessed with inspiration. Your stories are really fabulous. And by the way, brothers and sisters, he's written books for us grownups too. So if you want to check those out, just go to anthonydestefano.com, his website. He shows you there how to get all his adult books too, which, by the way, are also available here at Priests for Life at prolifeproducts.org. Until next time, this is Janet Morena, Executive Director of Priests for Life. Thank you for joining us. God bless.
I will be silent no more. I'm free from the light. Love opened my eyes. I will be silent no more. I'm free from the shame. I'm healed of the pain. I will be silent.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.